How did this idea come about, Phoebe?
Well, actually, it originated with Christine, who's a photographer. And about 3 years ago, she did some pro bono photography for Group Homes of Forsyth. And it was around the same time that she and I and Michelle Johnson were finishing up a documentary project on the Yadkin River. So she was beginning to learn and experiment with doing these multimedia web-based documentaries. So she took some of the photography that she'd done for Group Homes of Forsyth, and she and Michelle produced a short kind of little mini documentary about three residents at Group Homes. From there, the three of us thought that this would make a really fabulous project. And then around that time, I was at Wake Forest in the English department, and there's an organization at Wake Forest called the Humanities Institute, which is an interdisciplinary group of faculty interested in the humanities, and they are funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities, and they put out a call for proposals that was very specific. They were looking for faculty members working with local nonprofits in digital humanities.
Nice fit.
It was a beautiful fit. So we applied and were funded sometime in the summer of 2011. And that's when we began working in earnest with Group Homes and with the six men and women who we worked with over the course of a couple of years. Last spring, we began thinking of where we would exhibit this project. This was a community project, and we really wanted to exhibit it in the community is a way of bringing this kind of public humanities project outside of the campus to the community. So I went and spoke with Joanne at the Sawtooth, and she thought it was fabulous, but she said, well, we need to do some art with this too.
When Phoebe came to me and we started talking about this, it was like we really wanted to be actively engaged in it, not just a place to put the show, although that was really important for us, but that somehow we would also encourage our staff to be engaged with these residents in a very meaningful way. So the Wake Forest Humanities Institute came back and actually helped to fund the bigger project that we were talking about, which was the exhibition, but also the hands-on was a very low ratio. So it was like one teacher to two students or one teacher to one student art experience for these six residents. And the six residents ranged in age from, I would say, Jeree is probably in her late 20s up until their early 60s, and remarkable people. So what we really wanted to do was we started with our program coordinators and actually did a meet and greet. So we had a lunch meet and greet. So the six residents came over and met with our program coordinators, and we all had lunch together so that we could get a sense of what would be most appropriate for each of these folks in terms of their art experience. And then we started pairing them up with teachers and also understanding the things that they liked. What were their own personal iconic art expressions? So we had two women, Karen and Cecilia, who really like angels and beading and jewelry. And so we paired them up with someone, Marlene Kusser, who could actually help them make those pieces that were important to them. And then we had two gentlemen who were really interested in collage, and but they were doing collage that was with found objects, and that was John and Greg, and they are marvelous, marvelous pieces. I can't wait for people to see them.
Those found objects, those are objects that are important to John and Greg. So John collects cans for recycling and crushes cans, and this is something that he does every day. And Greg has thousands of interests, but one of the things he likes to do is dismantle electronics. So these weren't just any found objects. These were objects that were important to both of these men.
Exactly. And then James really likes music. And so we paired him up with Amy Kincaid, and he actually did monoprints. And that was when Carrie came out to see what we were doing. And so we were using music sheets as a part of what they were doing through a printing press. So it was pretty magical. And you could just see their faces light up. And then we had Jeree do a ceramics project, which I'm not going to disclose because that's really quite a wonderful surprise. You have to come and see that one. Mm-hmm. But they were all touchstones, personal narratives. There were objects involved and things that they were very passionate about. And I have to tell you that the program coordinators and the teachers who were involved in this, we had base camp where people would post messages and photographs while they were going along. I think for our teachers, it was a really transformative experience that they felt like this was something that most of them had not done before with this particular special population. And so it really was very meaningful for them. And for us as a nonprofit community arts center, really important to our mission because we want to make sure that we are touching all pockets of the community where we're able to. And so this was a very rare and wonderful opportunity for us to reach this particular population.
And this particular population includes those with Down syndrome, learning disabilities, but you specifically chose not to focus on those disabilities. Why not? What was the thought behind that?
Well, I think what we wanted to show was the stories of six people who happen to have developmental and intellectual disabilities. And so it comes up in some of the narrative, especially with the relatives speaking about them. But we didn't want to focus on the disabilities. We wanted to focus on who they are.
Yeah, I really appreciated that as a viewer because it seems like, and it's not like we ignore the fact that they're up against significant challenges at all, but I just felt like I learned so much about each person
without
all that. Oh,
well, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah,
it wasn't that I thought it was taboo or something not to speak about. But in fact, when I met many of these individuals, I don't think I knew initially what their diagnosis was. And in some cases, some of these men and women have more than one diagnosis, and I probably don't actually know the full complexity of what their diagnoses are. That really wasn't the point of what we were trying to do here.
For me, the project, and again, I'm so glad there's this artistic element because the whole notion of art really surpassing the spoken word in terms of your ability
Absolutely.
To get to know an individual interested me. And you were there firsthand. What did you gather from that?
Of the six adults that we actually had experiences with, probably over half of them have some difficulty with speech. And so really the thing that's remarkable about visual arts in particular, and I'm sure people would say about music and photography as well, is that it doesn't necessarily require that you are able to enunciate, but that you can lose yourself in the moment. You can be totally present in what you're doing, and that it moves you to a different level of consciousness. You're just in that particular moment. And these are people who have very active lives. They're engaged in a lot of other activities in their lives, but I don't know that they're doing regular artistic hands-on. I mean, I know they do things with music, but in terms of making objects, I'm not sure how many of them are actually doing that on a regular basis. So this was really sort of an out-of-norm experience for them, and I think it allowed them to just at least experience life in a different way.
Christine, if you could talk a little bit to this idea of art almost going beyond the spoken word in terms of really getting to who this person is.
Well, you know, I guess I'll start with you know, each individual taking their own photographs, which to the, you know, regular eye, they all might seem like snapshots and mundane, but they all tie in with the landscapes and the people that are important to each person. And then to even step beyond that, the art that they have created is probably the really neatest part of this whole project because it parallels their story and it parallels the photographs you'll see. And even the portraits that I took of each individual, their art speaks to the whole story.
In terms of this project, Christine, the exhibit itself, what can we expect to see at Sawtooth?
So when you walk into the exhibit, you're going to be struck, well, with a fairly good-sized portrait of each individual that I took. And initially, when we were thinking about designing this exhibit, I thought I would have multiple images that I took paralleled with multiple images each subject took. But what we decided was to put the focus more on each individual that participated. So you'll see a portrait that I just sort of picked out of the bunch that I felt really spoke about who this person was. And then underneath, you'll see images that they took of their life and people in their life. And then you will see a piece of art that each person created that really parallels very nicely with each story. And then you also have an iPad with the grouping of photographs of each individual, which will show their multimedia, the video part of their story.
For those yet to see this, it's a real all-engaging adventure, and you really feel like you get a sense of each individual, talking about Karen, James, John, Cecilia, Greg, and Dre. I mean, I'm seeing some wonderful photos there, but are there some, or maybe one or two, that for you, you're particularly proud of in the way you captured either a moment or a personality, if you can think of it in those terms, Christine?
So we'll kind of start with Greg. And Greg had so many different incredible images because he was very engaging and you just kind of fell right under his spell. All of his family members are just incredible characters as well. But I think that, you know, I went back to the first image that I took of Greg, which was he's sitting in front of a birthday cake on his birthday, surrounded by his caretaker and housemates and his family. And apparently, you know, his birthday was one of the most important holidays of the entire year. But just the light on his face and the light in the candles, I just think that really captured Greg. And then John Linville, I had to really spend a little bit more time with John because he was nonverbal. And it was a challenge to me because I wanted to tell each person's story uniquely, honestly. I really wanted to capture who they were. And then I spent some time with his sister and his twin brother. And I think the one image that speaks the most to me of John is when he's at dinner at his sister's house and they all are surrounded around a table holding hands and saying the dinner prayer. I just felt like that was the image to me that spoke the most about John Linville.
For a photographer to do great work in portraiture or even to some degree candids, I would think there's so much spoken about developing that rapport between you and the person on the other side of the lens. Was that something coming at this, dealing with people who are, or in the case of John, obviously nonverbal, others with varying degrees of disability? How did that impact that ability? And what did you learn through the process?
That was tough for sure. I mean, you have to connect with your subjects on some level, and you have to be patient. You know, that connection sometimes happens right away, like it did with Greg. It happened right away. And with Karen Lash, it happened right away. But with, you know, John Linville, I had so many extra visits to the group home and just spending time with him. I went to his where he works and spent time with him. And then finally, I just really saw what his family members saw. And I think that one image is when I felt like I had a connection.
Joanne, in terms of this whole project, and I guess we'll focus in on the artistic component at Sawtooth and seeing people paired with instructors and creating this art, what do you walk away with?
I think, first of all, that the hope that we get to do something like this again, because you never want this to be a one of when you come out of an experience where it's really compelling and very emotional and touching. One of the images that I have locked in my head is that the instructors were taking the photographs during the classes, and there's a great photo of John standing with this incredible grin on his face over this piece that he has made. It has the crushed cans on it. It has these little silhouettes of birdhouses. Of course, he loves his birds and his birdhouses. And then also a photograph of Nanette Davis, who was teaching Greg. And Greg is such a dear, sweet, just cheery personality, and they're leaning into one another, and he is made this wonderful construct with all the electronic pieces, but it is a aerial view looking down on New York City. And so what you get to see is his two passions colliding into this one wonderful piece, and then also just the sheer joy on their face. And so you have that experience and you think, this crystallizes for me why I do what I do with Sawtooth, because these experiences really are, they are life-changing for so many people.
Phoebe, I'm wondering, when I was reading the synopses or the essays that went with each individual, how much back and forth was there between you and the people directly that you're working with, either Karen, James, John, Cecilia, Greg, or Jiri? And then I appreciated reading them, and I would think in my case there'd be a real temptation to lapse into some poetic prose, but it's you tell their stories in a even more powerful way by telling it in your this really nice direct style.
Sure. So I'm going to back up for a second. Christine and I have worked together on and off for probably 15, 20 years. And when we first started working together, we were at the newspaper. And all of our projects were driven by the story, by the reporting, by the writing. And then the photography came in, not after the fact. It was intrinsic to it, but it came second. And this story was driven, I would say, by the photography. And Christine, a number of the people we worked with were difficult to connect with, especially for me because of the language difficulty. And so I would watch Christine and tag along with Christine and watch her photograph. And that was sort of my guide through this, that it wasn't a connection always about language and interviewing, which is what I do. It began with more of an emotional connection, which I think is at the core of what a portrait photographer does. But the spare style was driven by me not wanting to do too much interpretation. It was driven by me wanting the people we were collaborating with to tell their stories as much as possible. And when they couldn't tell their stories, to rely on their relatives and caretakers, but as much as possible to work in their language or their halting speech or their lack of speech to make that part of the story. And I suppose we keep coming back to John Linville's story, because when we turned all of our material over to Michelle Johnson, who can make poetry out of audio, again, she also had this challenge. How was she going to capture the voice of a man who doesn't speak very much or who barely speaks? And he's got this kind of machine that's programmed with buttons, and he can hit various buttons to say, and the machine says words. It says the words of things that he's interested in. And she was able to use it, not in an artificial way, but she was able to use it to bring out his personality and who he was, because she would use some of those buttons like, I like Texas Pete. And then she would use the recording of him laughing, and that's him, the laughter. It doesn't really matter that he can't speak a recognizable language so well, because what he speaks is from his heart.